What I'll do is I'll pretend that I'm in the screen meeting right here, and I had this great slideshow. The way it was going to start was I had gone and found a number of pictures of what we think of as the court jester. What does the court jester look like? Yeah, exactly. You know, bells on the ends of these things, you know, and then you got funny, you know, shoes and all, and baggy clothes and colorful. Okay, so there's our court jester. What is the dunce cap? They don't do this anymore. You know, the more appropriate type, I guess, for every year. What is the dunce cap? Okay, a dunce cap, and I have several pictures, is just a rolled up piece of paper that you put on, and the paper just comes to a sharp point real high up. So a dunce cap is just this tall, you know, kind of wizard's hat that you would wear. And you had a kid in school back in the very old days, 100 years ago, you know, was messing up somehow. In order to try to shame him into more respectable behavior, it's make him wear the dunce cap. It would say D-U-N-C-E on it, you know, it's just being stupid, right, a dunce cap. And then my favorite picture of them all, how many of you know who Alfred E. Newman is? And when you see the picture of Alfred E. Newman's face, okay, it's ultimate stupidity, right? And what was the phrase that went with it in Mad Magazine almost 40 years ago? What? Remember, it was what? Me worry? Okay. So the idea was that he had just too dumb to even know when there was danger anywhere. But so what I had done is I'd collected several of these, you know, and then I just had them flashing up on the screen, ending up with the Alfred E. Newman picture. But I was going to ask the question, what all these pictures had in common. Now, you're not able to see them here, but what all of them had in common, I think, is that we think of all of these as being harmless, relatively harmless. They're stupid people, you know, they're misbehaving in some way, but the only people that they're affecting are themselves. We are now going to be studying the fool, and it's going to take several weeks. What I won't be able to do tonight is to take you through the first section where out of 66 verses that deal with the fool in the book of Proverbs, and 100 more that are in the rest of the Bible, I made up a section that was on how terrifically dangerous that the fool is. And so I'm telling you, because I wish we could go through it this way, we will go through it this way next week, but I just wanted to make the point at first, there is nothing that is innocuous or harmless about the fool. The fool is tremendously dangerous. And Solomon's going to spend an awful lot of time pointing that out and giving us advice so that we can recognize who the fool is, and then we'll know how to handle the fool depending on which category of foolishness that he's involved in, so that we will respond properly, and then, of course, how to avoid becoming one. It's kind of contagious. Yeah, the foolishness is a thing that you can acquire just from the friends that you spend time with. We've seen this, you know, already in the early going in the book of Proverbs. And of course, evil companions, what? You know, corrupt good morals. We know this from other places in Scripture as well. So tonight, unhappily, you know, after just a tremendous amount of work, you know, I had everything arranged for you, I don't have it. We're just going to have to go down through the list then that I gave you here last Sunday, and I think even the Sunday before. Now, it's not necessarily that you have that list, but there are just a few more that are still back there in the foyer. So if you want to have one, you know, by all means, I don't want to be able to get up right now and be the first to grab one. Just don't push and shove. But all we're going to be able to do tonight now is just to go through that. Computer wasn't working. I don't have the file. You know, it was in my paperwork. It all just kind of fell apart. So maybe just as well, because this was the first time that I was going to all that effort anyway. Always in the past, when I gave you the list, I would suggest a verse, usually it's the first verse that's in the list, as a place where you would then put your list of verse references so that you'd always be able to find, you know, the information on the fool. So it's just, well, we're going to go through the list, you know, in that manner anyway. That is the best way to list them, I think, in your Bible there.
And then I just felt, though, that because there were so many, 66 of them, that I didn't want to just be, you know, wandering through that much material. So I divided it all up into subcategories, and as I say, we'll get to that later. But tonight we'll just be going straight down through the list. So the first time that you have a reference to the fool there in the book of Proverbs is in the very first chapter, very early on in chapter 1 and down at verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now, in after an introductory class, you know, we spent a lot of time in that first class dealing with the steps to wisdom, of which this is one, and is the first, and then discussing that fact that the antidote to foolishness is wisdom, and the first step on this road to wisdom is that of verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And in the second half of the verse then, what's the problem with the fool? What's his first problem? He despises it. He doesn't like it. Jeff, another comment?
He just refuses to accept any kind of thing that's good.
Exactly that. And it's the most astonishing thing, brethren, but I believe it's the majority of people in the world, after all, the way is straight and narrow, a few there are who find it, who just find wisdom, knowledge, instruction, the acquisition of data that you then would work with so that you know how to behave properly, and something that just either is uninteresting or absolutely despicable to them. They don't want to put in the effort, or they don't like what it is that they're hearing. I suppose that it depends on the fool you're talking to, as to which of many different reasons there might be. But the solution to the problem Solomon gives in the first verse. Fear what? Fear the Lord. Reverence Him. Respect Him. And fear Him in the fullest sense of that word, fear, as well, because one of these days, what are we surely going to face? Judgment is coming. It is absolutely coming. And it will be without partiality. And it will be very thorough. And there will be no excuse, that we can offer. Everybody should fear that. Now, if you've been watching the news, we've had a really tough week here, this last week, and New York's a long way away from here, but it's just been heartbreaking, in the entire country, that we have some guy, who in Las Vegas is his name, who had already done time for manslaughter, had a number of drunk driving convictions and all the rest of that, who, at a very high rate of speed in his car, hit a taxi that was carrying two 21-year-old, I would say, kids, their husband and wife, 21 years old, going to the hospital to have her baby. Well, he killed one on the spot. Another one died a little bit later, and I think it took 3 days for the baby to die. So now, today the baby's dead, too. Now, for 3 days, there's a huge manhunt. He's not turning himself in. And today, he surrendered. After he had what? Lawyered up is the term that we use. Okay? So he's trying to prepare himself. Now he's coming in to court for all of this. What is his excuse? Well, he was under fire. There was a hail of bullets. Somebody was trying to kill him, and that's why he was fleeing. I'm thinking, how many mistakes can you make in a single lifetime? And how catastrophic can they be? If I may go so far, here's a guy that doesn't seem to fear the Lord much, does he? This is the kind of guy that, if you got to know him, has not spent a lot of time in church. This is a guy that doesn't read his Bible a whole lot. This is a man who does not fear the Lord. And since he has not even the beginning of wisdom, I think it would be fair, despite the warnings to be careful about how you call a fool. The Lord called people fools. God called people fools. David in the Psalms says, it's fool, it says in his heart, there is no God. We'll have to be careful to understand the advice against calling somebody a fool. But there are fools. And there's 66 verses about it in this book. And above all, more of those verses are on one topic than any other. And that topic is how dangerous the fool is. Fools are killing people every single day. One of my favorite fools kills about 2,600 people a year. That's in every state in the Union, one every week. What is it that kills 2,600 people a year in the United States of America? Texting while driving. In every state this week, somebody will die because of that. In every state next week. In every state the week after that. Now, this, you know, can be a simple thing to do all the time. But in certain circumstances, that which would ordinarily you would think of as innocent, harmless, suddenly becomes what? It's fatal. And so throughout the book of Proverbs, we look at 66 of them that are giving us this warning, but it is also giving us the overarching antidote. Fear God and begin the pursuit of wisdom, and you will not be a fool. You'll be able to recognize the fool when you see one coming. You'll know how to handle the fool so that they do not destroy you. And then, you know, your life's going to be a whole lot happier once you get this picture. Because this is dangerous. These guys, you need to know about. Okay?
When you fear God and keep His commandments, one of His commandments, obey the laws of the land. So when you're putting yourself in a situation where you have people who are not obeying the laws of the land, you have a really good mirror to be holding up that says this person does not have a proper respect for God, and it should give you some little red flags to help you say I shouldn't be listening.
Yeah, you know, amen, you're starting to give every preacher's outline, I guess, you know, on the topic, too, is that respect, brethren, is a thing that you are taught. You are taught this first, where? At home. Then where's the second place you get taught this? You go to school, and you get taught at school. Thirdly, you're going to be living in a world that's full of laws out there, you know, and so you come to respect the police, you know, and, you know, that level of authority. But respect is a thing that you have to not only learn, but you need to apply it. But to apply it, you know, across the board. Carol's exactly right. You have somebody who flouts the law. They're not interested in, you know, driving laws. Okay, they're not interested in, you know, any law. I mean, they're just living in, you know, their own world and by their own rules. Well, when you're doing that, very, very foolish. It is disrespectful of the entire society you live in and profoundly dangerous. Rachel.
This could be just from my day to day at work, but this reminds me of the foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child.
Mm-hmm.
That something that I see is that people tend to think that children aren't going to be what they are now, and so there's not a lot of teaching that happens. They kind of think, well, they'll grow out of this, or you don't need to be so hard on them about those periods, or whatever, you know, whatever it is I'm trying to teach them, but that's who they're going to be when they grow up.
Amen. And Rachel sees it up close and personal as a school teacher. The verse you cited, and I can't remember the reference, but foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Let's just take that part first. What is the inherent nature of a child? Foolishness. And if something is bound up, what does that mean? If it's bound up in the heart of a child, then it is, yeah, it's natural, but I mean, it's tied to it, you know, it's sticky. And then, what's the last part of the verse? Come on now, what's the last part? Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive us from him, drive us far from him. Rod of correction. There's the discipline that we also talked about extensively when we first started doing the study of Proverbs. And so, you know that every child is foolish, and that is no disrespect to them. God said so, the natural order of things, you don't come forth from the womb, you know, with the wisdom of Solomon or the knowledge of an Einstein. You come out utterly ignorant. And then you need to be disciplined. You need to be controlled. You need to have rules, and you need to have punishment. When you fail to keep those rules, that rod of correction will drive that foolishness from them. without the rod of correction, then that child, as Rachel is pointing out, is not by nature just going to grow up, you know, to become wise. Typically, that foolishness, you know, surrounds and abides and consequently eventually destroys. Okay, so chapter 1 and verse 7, first time the fool appears in the book. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction, and therein lies the problem. They don't like learning. They don't like the effort that that requires. Okay, now the next verse that deals with the fool is at chapter 1, verse 32. The waywardness of the naive shall kill them, and the complacency of fools shall destroy them. Now that was the first in the lengthy list of how dangerous that the fool really is. Now we're going to learn, and as I say, we'll come back next week, we'll look at these in order, but we're going to find out that this fool is dangerous not only to himself, but to everybody that's around him as well. In this verse, he is only dangerous to himself. So, in the first part, the waywardness of the naive shall kill him. Literally it says the simple ones. And then the last part, the complacency of fools shall destroy them. This is death and destruction because of waywardness and complacency. The fool is off the rails. The fool is wayward. Wayward means you're not in the path. You're off the way. You're not staying in the road. That's what waywardness is. And what is complacency? You tell me.
Lack of concern.
Lack of concern. Complacency is just, well, what do we say about rivers? Going with the flow. No, a complacent person, not bothered, not upset, not making any changes, everything's okay. This is really different than being content. New Testament's going to teach us how to be content. Paul was content in every circumstance. He could have a lot of money, he could have no money. He learned how to be content. That's not complacent. He learned how to accept the circumstances he was in so that he could have peace of mind and live a happy and productive life. But if he's complacent, then he's not trying to do anything about it. Complacency is a characteristic of fools. Ambition is the opposite. And discipline is when you get on the rails and in the road and you stay there. So we have now the first statement of how dangerous the fool is, and then these two things that are characteristic, waywardness and complacency. Brethren, when you personally are off the straight and narrow path, and you know when you are, when you're involved in sin, then what are you? This is foolish. If ever there was anything, you know, the Bible teaches, Old Testament or New, what is the wages of sin?
Yeah.
It's death. The psalmist is saying exactly the same thing. How do I solve the problem according to the second half of verse 32? Do not allow yourselves to become complacent. Do not allow yourselves to just go with that flow and just, you know, not be upset by these things. What is the only appropriate response to the injustice that we see in the world today? It's anger. You should be upset. What is the only appropriate response when you see foolishness? It's really the same thing. It should bother you. It should upset you. When you see sin, you shouldn't be comfortable with it. It's not supposed to be something that you shrug your shoulders at and say, you know, that's the way of the world. Well, it is the way of the world. But don't be complacent about it. What is the Christian's responsibility in the face of sin? To expose it. Good for you. We just saw that in Ephesians last week. To expose it, and then what else? Try to correct it. Try to encourage people, you know, not to participate in it. So, and that is, fortunately, it was the second verse in the list, you know, but it was also the main point that I had originally wanted to make. Brethren, foolishness is fatal. Fatal to that individual, fatal potentially to the people around them. It is mortally dangerous. If any correction to foolishness is going to be wrought in this world, Who's going to take care of doing that teaching other than Rachel for grade school kids? Christians in the world today were that light, which we saw 2 weeks ago in Ephesians. So he said he had done a killing.
I had a friend in high school that I once rode in the car, and I told her she was speeding, and she asked, and she said, oh, I have a lead foot. The last time I wanted to ride in the car with her, and she was 21 before she died in a car accident.
Oh, my.
These kids who are exposed to somebody who drinks at a party and that wants to drive. I mean, that's the same. You're complacent. You're putting yourself to be in the same situation. Somebody's texting. Why don't you want to ride with that person? Because they text. I'm not riding with them. I mean, that's a huge thing to say to somebody. It's a huge stand for a young person.
One of the best slogans, I think, in advertising history was only at, you know, trying to be at war with complacency. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. I mean, that's become, you know, a cultural touchstone now. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. But what was that all about, that slogan? Fighting complacency. Not allowing yourself to just shrug your shoulders and let it happen. Acquiring that backbone and stiffening that backbone so you stand up and do something about it. If you really want to be a friend, you know, then go crossways with your friend and try to prevent some of this. Okay? How many of you had somebody you know in high school has already perished in a car accident? Been this in every church you know, I've ever been a part of. And there's just hardly a family, you know, on the earth today that doesn't know somebody that's died in a car accident. The good news is it's getting better all the time. When I started teaching driver's ed, we were killing 54,000 people a year in the United States. Now, it's been about 10 years since I started teaching driver's ed, and now we're down to about 44. This has a lot to do with the additional safety of vehicles, you know, but it has a lot to do with people like Mothers Against Drunk Driving who are anything but what? Complacent. They had paid the ultimate price. They had lost children. Those mothers then decided they were going to get up and do something about it, and they really did, didn't they? You know, we've all seen the advertising. Everybody knows what the MADD stands for. You know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Well, what they were was just, you know, ordinary, everyday people who decided they were not going to be complacent. Of all people on the earth, brethren, Christians should be the least complacent that there is. In each and every moment of our day, we are not complacent about who we are. We are striving to perfect ourselves to the fullness of the measure of the stature of Christ. Right? Ephesian letter. And then, we're the light to the world. We're not complacent about the evil that we see about us. Something has to be done about it when you have the opportunity and ability. Don't put it off. Okay, any comment or questions in on those two? They're just foundationally important. First verse 7 is the first step toward wisdom and shows that the fool despises it and why he stays that way. The second one points out how dangerous that fool is at verse 32. And again, what needs to be done about it. Don't be wayward. Don't be complacent. Okay, the next occurrence of the fool is in chapter 3. Chapter 3 and down at verse 35. The wise will inherit honor, but fools display dishonor. As a matter of fact, literally, it's a little more graphic or dramatic. What it says literally there is that fools raise high dishonor. And it's a beautiful picture. You know, it's the picture of having your flag and raising it in pride, you know, waving that, raise it up. It says, this is who you are. It's representative of who you are. So in chapter 3, and at verse 35 again, what do the wise inherit ultimately at the end of this life? Brother, we're going to heaven. We're going to see God and Jesus as they are. We will shed the flesh entirely. We will be free from all of its weaknesses. We will spend an eternity in the presence of our God, beholding Him as He is. Okay? So, the wise will inherit honor there. Do they also inherit honor here on the earth? Yes, they do. And at this point, I just want to make a distinction. Can people who are just wretched fools also be wise? and receive water. Okay, explain that to me now. I thought we'd just been studying how the two are mutually exclusive. Now I'm suggesting there are lots of fools who receive honor. Okay, they are fools who receive honor from whom? Other fools. And the rest of the world. Fools get honor all the time. Some of the most foolish people that ever walked the earth, you know, are also among the most renowned and respected.
Not long ago, a young man, a barefoot bandit.
Yeah.
And they had a whole following of people who thought he was great.
I was still living in Washington with a barefoot bandit was doing this thing. He was just across Puget Sound from us, stealing boats and then an airplane and all this stuff and breaking into people's houses and actually developed some sort of big web following. The cult of the barefoot bandit. People were proud of him, respecting him, thought it was terrific, you know, that he was able to elude the police for so long. And they finally busted him in a foreign country. I can't remember what country it was. He stole an airplane and flung out of the U.S. market. It was sort of, Bill?
It seems to me that the policeman that was recently being pursued for murdering another policeman, or the ex-cop, he also had a following of people that were honoring him.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, you can't have a criminal of any kind today that will not have, you know, a rabid fan club that's going to set up a website and all the rest of that. You know, we call them anti-heroes, and it's been a part of the world's culture, you know, since day one, I guess. But what that is honor from fools. Okay? So, what is the verse telling us? In chapter 3, and verse 35, the wise will inherit honor from God. But fools display dishonor. Yes, they do. But remember, these are not mutually exclusive. Fools can get honor, and we'll see several verses that talk about the fool's honor. The fool's honor is going to come up several times here in the book of Proverbs. Now, the wise man, of course, though, does not need any kind of accolades from foolish people. He doesn't need that kind of stuff. He's not interested in that kind of thing. There's a variety of reasons, I think, why this is so, but not the least of which. Why do you suppose that Jesus did not want people, did not want demons proclaiming that he was the Son of the living God? Why is it that Paul did not want a demon-possessed fortune-telling girl announcing that he was a representative of God? Why?
He didn't want to have any association with
that. That's it. What is the commendation, the accolades, the respect, all the dignity and honor that a fool heaps upon you worth? Makes you look bad, doesn't it? See, all things being equal with many other passages, the fool is supposed to be uncomfortable with us, brethren. They're supposed to hate us. They might even be persecuting or killing us because we are fundamentally incompatible with them. See, not often that, you know, you're going to see a fool who understands who you really are giving you any kind of honor or glory, and you wouldn't want to receive it anyway. So we'll come back to this quite a bit. The honor of the fool is going to be a recurring theme in here, too. But what does a fool do with dishonor? He glories, to quote another Bible verse, he glories in his shame. Somebody heard it? I heard somebody had it. He glories in his shame. Okay, glories in his shame. Anybody ever heard of Indiana Jones? Who hasn't seen an Indiana Jones movie somewhere? Marion, Indiana Jones, you know, girlfriend in the first movie and in the last movie. Ask me anything about Indiana. Okay. So, what was the big scene where she proved herself better than all the men? She could drink them under the table. Wave that flag high. Glory in your what? Glory in your shame. This is the way fools do. They think it is honorable to commit sin, and they're proud of it. Christians are here on this earth to see that they don't get away with that. They do the best we can to prevent it. Now, let's skip quite a few chapters now, brethren. Come on over to chapter 8. Find the next one. In chapter 8, in verse 5. O naive ones, discern prudence, and O fools, discern wisdom. Listen,
For I shall speak noble things, and the opening of my lips will produce right things. Now, we're not going to have to spend much time on this. We've already talked about it in the previous class. But, brethren, once again, remember your responsibility as Christians today. Responsibility they had as, you know, Jews in the Old Testament, Solomon had as he's writing the book, and as he represents wisdom as this woman who goes everywhere trying to put an end to what? Foolishness. She's crying out in the streets, looking for fools, so that she can correct that problem. So now, in verse 5, here she is. Oh, naive ones, discern prudence. Oh, fools, discern wisdom. And we, each and every one of us, are to be just as vigorous, as insistent, as vocal, you know, in trying to reach out to the world and say, hey, we have found something that is more precious than silver and gold. We have found something that is eternal and not just useful or valuable here on this earth. We have found that which is true and not false. We have found that which is important above all things. We have found the pearl of great price. What should we be doing with it? Same way wisdom is portrayed right here. Eagerly, anxiously, energetically getting out to help people with it. Making an effort to reach them. Any comment or question on that one? Jerry, go ahead.
An observation, Larry. This, as you say here, is wisdom trying to teach and crying out to the fool to put away foolishness and to become wise, argues that foolishness is not congenital, much less incurable. The person who says, that's just the way I am, is complacent, willing to accept what they're doing for some reason, unwilling to consider anything wiser, and that, of course, is to their shame. They can fix it if they want to.
That absolutely is. Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, brief but kind of heart-breaking story. I was 27 years preaching for the Smoky Point congregation. I baptized a husband and a wife up there and watched them raise their family through all the grade school and in the teenage years, you know, and beyond. I've known them now for over 30 years. And so I've seen those kids from the very beginning. Now, in the church at Smoky Point at that time, there was one girl who from the time she was just a kid, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, she was just the worst liar I ever saw. The one of these people who would tell a lie when the truth would serve them better. You ever heard that expression? She was awful. She was so bad of an influence on the rest of the kids. So rebellious. So lippy. So insolent. So disruptive in the Bible classes. I finally went to her parents now that she was about 14 or 15 years old. And I told the parents that she was no longer welcome. We didn't want her coming back. We were sorry about it, you know, but we could not afford to have her here. She was too much of a detriment to all the other kids and a disruption to the adults and everybody else. Okay? Now, I'm going to tell you about a conversation I had with her, though. She now, you know, just in the same time frame, went joyriding one night. Stole her dad's car, you know, went out in the night. Dad realized that what she was doing, he gave chase, which was also foolish, wound up in a high-speed chase after his own daughter, you know, in the night. Unfortunately, nobody got hurt, but in the end, she was in jail. So I went to visit her up here in Chehalis, I guess it is, in Washington, you know, they got a youth facility there real close to the freeway. And so I went to visit her, and you know, we were still trying to work with her, and finally when she got out, I remember sitting down with her and trying to do what Jerry just recommended. And I said to her, there's a difference between stupid and foolish. And you're not stupid. You've got a healthy IQ. You've got a great brain that God gave you. But you're a fool. You're not using it. You're making these wretched, horrible decisions. And of course, she wound up pregnant out of wedlock with the church as soon as she could. You know, eventually, you know, we'd ask her not to come, but we still had a relationship with her. And I've seen her, you know, again. You know, it's just a terrible long story. But what's the point of all of that? Well, the two words you used, it's not congenital and...
Much less incurable.
yet much less incurable. You know, she had all the power within her hands to fix it. But it seemed like for 15 years I watched that kid just never make a decent, smart, you know, decision. It was just awesome. Not stupid. Smart. But foolish. Okay? Not a matter of IQ, but a matter of what? Choice. And I'll tell you for sure, she didn't fear the Lord. That's where it all started. Somebody else had a hand up, I think, here in that last little segment. But yeah, Paul, you were going to make a comment.
I was just going to say that you talk about Proverbs. If you're a Proverb, if you wish you call it that, or an old farmer, you should put an otter suey if a hog was going to eat.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Otter suey if a hog was going to eat.
I still couldn't hear it. Did you hear?
The farmer that wouldn't.
Being a fool. He wouldn't chase the hog away. Too lazy. Wouldn't do anything. Nobody could tell him anything.
Okay. Okay, yeah, and it's fair to call it a proverb. A proverb is either inspired or uninspired. Benjamin Franklin gave us a bunch of proverbs. I would call it a proverb. Okay, and we're going to introduce quite a few of them as we go through the class here, too. Okay, so let's go to the next one now. We've got this whole giant string in chapter 10, and we'll probably close out this evening with just those. So let's try to see if we can't just finish this chapter. But in chapter 10, the first one there in the list is at verse 8, 10:8. The wise of heart will receive commands, but a babbling fool will be thrown down. Now, most all of the Proverbs, of course, have a very direct relationship from part A to part B in a given verse or in a given proverb. This one's maybe not quite as easy to see, but the wise of heart will receive commands. Well, there's a statement that's, you know, easy to grasp. What, when you give instruction, when you give commands to a wise person, what do? They listen, they respond, they hear what you say, they accept what you say, they apply what you say. They are receptive. A wise person is receptive. They're taking in the data. They're not resisting it. They're not made out of iron, you know, and everything's just bouncing off of them. The wise, by nature, I guess, or by choice, have made this decision that they're going to listen and receive. Now, the second part, though, but a babbling fool will be thrown down. Now, I say it's a little bit hard to make the connection, but I think the point is that the babbling fool does not receive the commands. And then you have to make a sort of a logical deduction here. If you don't receive the commands, then ultimately what happens to you? It's going to crash. You will be cast down. You will be thrown down. Nobody, you know, feels good after that's happened to them. So it's kind of a three-step proverb. The wise of heart receives the commands. This babbling fool then, by implication, does not, and therefore will be thrown down. I think I saw a hand there. Michael? Amen. And what Michael just said, you know, it reminds me of another part of this now. They're not listening, Michael said. Okay? What are they doing in the verse? Babbling. They're doing all the talking and not doing the listening. Okay? We're going to have several proverbs about the fool's mouth and how he behaves with his tongue.
Talking about the
men
of the U.S. Army?
I didn't think so. No. Okay, so in 10:8, anybody else comment on 10:8?
Yeah.
Here again.
I think your New American Standard reads battling.
Yes.
New King James reads praying.
Literally, it says the foolish of lips.
So the idea, I think, is that here is the wise in heart receives commands, but the fool, hearing the same information, ridicules. people slander. He, you know, makes fun of it. He's a praying individual, a bad word.
Yeah, that's a great observation and absolutely true from verses we'll see later as we continue studying about the nature of the fool. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, let's go on to, there you are.
I just want to say, I have the New American Standard too, but mine says he will be ruined.
Ruined. Yeah, it's just a translation. And I've got several more verses, not this one, that are going to use that translation, though. We're going to see the ruination of the fool on several occasions. So, yes, that is the end result of the fool. He is ruined, cast down, ruined. All right, so verse 10, skip over 9 and come to 10. He who winks the eye causes trouble, and a what? What's that same guy, isn't it? He who winks the eye causes trouble, and the babbling fool will be what? The second part is exactly identical, isn't it? Now, in cases like that, what I always recommend you do, draw a circle, just a tiny circle around the verse number, you know, 8. And then draw a line down and put a circle around verse 10. So the next time you read either one of those, you'll immediately on the page see that the two are connected. In both cases, we're talking about the babbling fool. In one case, he does not receive commands. And in the second case, at verse 10, he winks with the eye and he causes trouble. So what is winking with the eye all about?
Wink,
wink,
nod, nod,
is actually a Bible quote.
Yeah. Going along with someone else's foolish.
Okay, they're all winking is what? You're right. Winking is what? You do that for yourself?
Joking.
It's some sort of a signal, isn't it? You're sending a signal to somebody else that you're in on the joke or you're in on the con or whatever that is, you know. And so, but always, if you're winking with the eye, what the expression means here in the context is that when I wink, I am signaling to you what about what I actually said.
Not
see, you understand? There's something going on here behind the scenes. What I say is not necessarily what I mean. So there's something else going on here. This guy is duplicitous. This guy is a fake. This guy has ulterior motives. This is an individual who wants to deceive. That sort of an individual causes what in verse 10? It causes trouble. He's not honest. He's not forthright. He's not upright. He's got some kind of ulterior motives going on. Don't be like that. Be absolutely above board, you know, on your behavior and all your dealings, and then you're not going to be the fool, and you're not going to be cast in. Okay, verse 14. Chapter 10, verse 14. Wise men store up knowledge, but with the mouth of the foolish, ruin is at hand. Now, wise men are storing up knowledge. But this, for the third time now this night, has been put over against the fool's what? His mouth. Over against his mouth. While the wise individual, apparently, and again by implication, is quietly learning, accepting, taking it in, being instructed, acquiring from somebody else, what is the fool doing? And whether he's speaking against it, or just revealing his own mind, as we'll see in quite a few other passages, with his mouth, what is at hand? Ruin. And again, those are verses and putting it together, you know, before the fact, both for himself and what? And for those that are around him. They're terribly destructive, not just for themselves, but for those around about. Verse 18 in chapter 10. He who conceals hatred has lying lips, and he who spreads slander is a fool. Now, brethren, this is a curious passage. This is a curious passage because we've got instruction, you know, about being careful if you hate somebody. We've got lots of instruction about hatred, as a matter of fact. But what verse 18, again, there's an implication here. Solomon implies an enormous amount of the wisdom that he is giving to us. He who conceals hatred is a liar. So we don't want to be a liar. You want to have lying lips. So what would seem in the first part of verse 18 then be the thing you need to do?
steal it. Fine. So we only have lying lips. We are not going to conceal hatred. There's time for everything. Hatred is one of those things in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Sometimes hatred is appropriate. When it is appropriate, if it is concealed, then what? Not good. What are you supposed to do then with your hatred? Reveal it. Now here comes the kicker on this. To whom? Yeah, take your problem to the person you have the problem with. Otherwise, if you take it to somebody else, then what is it? It's now slander. Slander, not good. Okay? So you see how that one works in chapter 10 and in verse 18. He who conceals hatred has lying lips. He who spreads slander is a fool. Don't have lying lips by being, you know, concealing something. So don't pretend that you love somebody if you don't. Maybe don't engage in slander against that person either. Our instruction, many other passages, you go to the person that you have the problem with, leave your gift at the altar, go and reconcile. You know, then come back. Take care of the problem right there. Hiding it isn't going to do anybody any good. Brethren, if you have a beef with somebody, if you are stewing in your juices because of it, if you're allowing yourself to be angry and all the time, you know, your mind is just boiling with all this unhappiness because you have a grievance against somebody, you're making a huge mistake. What should you do? Quit lying. If everybody else in the congregation thinks that your relationship with that individual is just hunky-dory, you're lying. It's not. But it's also intolerable in the sight of God. What do you need to get up and go do? Solve that problem so there isn't any more hatred. Solve the problem. And you don't solve the problem by concealing it, and you don't solve the problem by spreading slander. How do you solve the problem? Go to them and them alone. Okay? Now, brother, I wish you had a dollar, you know, for every church that's been divided in the last 2,000 years because of not taking that advice. People allowing themselves to get angrier and angrier and to harbor all kinds of ill will toward folks, you know, until you just develop all this prejudice. And in the end, it's just tearing the whole congregation apart. Because you're a liar, you're faking things, it's eating at you, it's a misrepresentation in the congregation, and you're likely to wind up as a slanderer. Real hard to hate somebody and then speak well of them. You can fake it, okay, but in your heart of hearts, you're lying. You're not helping yourself, you're not helping them, you're not helping the church. Don't do that. 21. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of understanding. And that's one I think tonight I'm just going to kind of let you chew on, because, or you can tell me, I've always had a hard time just understanding that, I guess. The lips of the righteous feed many. Okay, well, then the things they say and do, you know, are nourishing and provide help for people. Fools die for lack of understanding. And I'm always just kind of wondering how those two fit together. You can help me with it. I'd appreciate it. To me, it's like two separate statements that are both true, but I kind of don't see the connection there. Anybody got an idea on that? Carol, go ahead.
Well, if the righteous person lives, he's a righteous farmer, he does what he is supposed to do. He tills the soil, he lets the soil go, follows what he's supposed to do, he lets people glean. He feeds many people.
Okay.
But the foolish person has a lack of understanding of what he's supposed to do. So his farm doesn't maybe even take care of him. So in the way that it goes, the righteous person is able to provide for others, and the fool is not even able maybe to provide.
I see that, and I really like it. I see what you got. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it? You see how that's working, everybody? The lips of the righteous individual has more than enough. He can take care of himself and everybody else. The fool dies because he can't even take care of himself because of the lack of understanding. He's not righteous. He's not wise. Okay, well, obviously, we're out of time. We've got one last one here in verse 23. Doing wickedness is like sport to a fool.
and so is wisdom to a man of understanding. Wow. That's not hard to find foolish people who just glory in their foolishness and, you know, treat it like a sport. They're trying to become better liars. They're proud of how they can pull the wool over people's eyes. They're trying to, you know, be better thieves. They're trying to cheat. They're trying to be better in these evil things. And so here they are, you know, participating in wickedness like it was some kind of a sport that you needed to perfect yourself at. But so is wisdom to a man of understanding. The man of understanding enjoys wisdom like he enjoys athletics or sport that you would take pleasure in. Try to imagine, brethren, wisdom as being your favorite activity. Whatever it is that you like to do, you know, everybody's got some kind of occupation or, you know, that they enjoy that's like a sport. And then think, do I really feel that way? Do I get excited? Do I take satisfaction? Do I find pride? Am I, you know, victorious, you know, when I acquire wisdom? Do I treat it like something that is fun and that I would like to spend more time doing? Because if not, then who are you more like? The wise person or the foolish person? Where did we start with chapter 1 and verse 7? Fools despise wisdom and knowledge. They hate it. It's not enjoyable to them. It's not something they want to participate in. They're not rooting for anybody, you know, in that regard. But as righteous people, we are. We just thrill to that. Wisdom is a thing that we see like scoring a goal. And we want to rejoice over it the same way that you would. This is what the righteous person and the wise person is like. They have likes and dislikes in this earth that are the opposite of the fool. And the fool's desires are base and evil and selfish and lazy. And what are the righteous and the wise? They are perfecting themselves now in Christ and, you know, in God's wisdom, but Bible knowledge and wisdom. So that, as Carol was pointing out a little while ago with that farmer illustration, you know, we are able to preserve ourselves, our families, our friends, and everybody about us. So the righteous, the wise individual, they have far-reaching good for everybody that's around them. And for them, they can do a good deed, they can learn a new thing, they can become, you know, more righteous or more wise, then touchdown! Okay? And for the foolish, they commit another sin, they do another, you know, evil deed to somebody, touchdown.